Welcome in, Tappers. It is another edition of the Tapping the Keg podcast here on the Snow Tap Network. Mitch Ross here with you. Nolan Murphy as well. Say hi, Murph.
Oh, we are headed to the NLCS, baby.
Yes, we are. The Milwaukee Brewers get it done. In a sweep over the weekend of the Colorado Rockies. I'm not sure, you know, how much I saw that coming, but we will get into that in just a minute. Obviously, listen to us here on iTunes. Follow Charlie, the Snow at SnowTabWI on Twitter. Follow me at Mitch Ross MKE. Follow Nolan at the Nolan Murphy. You can also hear him on ESPN West Palm down there in Florida. Where else, Murph?
Every Friday and Saturday, part of Murph's Fantasy, part of the Snow Tap Network, and also
yes,
every Sunday, world's fastest pregame show. I mean, if you
on
want
the
a
Insta.
Shout out, that's a cheap one.
Yeah, that's a cheap one. That you might also get a name call in there if you want. Murph.
But, man, it's an exciting time, I bet, for you to be in Milwaukee, to say the least.
Oh, yeah, for sure. I mean, you have the Brewers starting up here Friday. They got the long layoff. And last weekend, you had the clinching. You also had the Milwaukee Oktoberfest last weekend as well, which was actually in the new arena, which was kind of nice. It wasn't really – I mean, you had, like, the 3rd Street kind of pub crawl going on like they've done in the past. You know, where you got the shirts and everything, but there was also kind of more of a, I don't know, a grown-up version, if you will, where people were bringing their dogs, and, like, it was in the new plaza of the new arena. So it was, like, there's a, you know, glass over top, they have heaters, and it was, like, 50 degrees. So a couple heaters was all right, but I'd hate to see it when it's 20 degrees. You know, it might be a little chilly out there. But that was cool to, like, kind of get an idea of what it might be like if, God forbid, there's, like, a finals game at the you know, I'm sure it'll be like that for playoff games too, you know, as far as just people around, and there's a big ass TV in there. So I'm sure they ran the Badger game there Saturday night. We'll get into that, those guys, a little bit here later on as well in the podcast. So yeah, good time definitely in Milwaukee, where we just kind of are in the downtime here on Wednesday with the game coming up 2 days from now, a 7 o'clock first pitch. And Murph, I guess your just initial thoughts here. And as far as from a bird's eye kind of national view, is there any talk going on about Milwaukee down there?
Yeah, I mean, Brewers Rockies was definitely the least of the three watched divisional series, with Yankees Red Sox being number one. Mm-hmm. But I think the Brewers the Brewers are getting a lot of national love. People really like, you know, Christian Yelich. They can't talk enough about how the Yankees traded for the wrong outfielder. And the Dodgers, you know, yes, they're a national team, but, you know, they haven't won a World Series since 1988. This, you know, they've ran this team back so many times, you know, with Kershaw, you know, Yasiel Puig. They have Manny Machado now. So the Brewers are getting a lot of national love, which you never really expect out of a small market team.
I want to back you up a little bit, though. You live in, like, Yankee land, like, kind of south. Down there in Florida, there's a ton of people from New York, and a bunch of Yankees fans have grown up that way, whether their parents are from New York. So they really regret trading for Stanton, huh?
Yeah, I mean, you got to catch a Yankees fan on the right day. They love the idea of, you know, rolling back to 1927, you know, Bronx Bombers, you know, with Judge, Sanchez, who barely can catch, and Stanton. But, you know, if you're listening to National ESPN Radio or Mad Dog Sports Radio, you know, a lot of the conversation is, why wasn't Yelich looked at as this five-tool player, you know, who really probably could have helped balance the Yankees out a little bit more?
Oh yeah.
And as we taped this on Tuesday night, the Yankees look like they're, you know, about to go down in four games to one of the greatest Red Sox teams we've ever seen. And, you know, not only, you know, they have Stanton long term, but, you know, he has a huge contract compared to what Yelich, you know, the bargain the Brewers have. I believe they have him locked up under team control till 2021.
Yeah, but to me, I guess Stanton is much more of a Yankee. You know what I mean? Like, he's kind of he's probably a top five known face in baseball, right? I mean, he's probably up there, and he's kind of a Yankee guy. Like, he likes the bright lights. He's from California as well. But I was gonna say Christian Yelich is kind of the opposite, where he's kind of a soft spoken dude from California. Has probably no ties to New York at all. So, I mean, there's just, you know, I don't know. I think Yelich would, not that he would have struggled in New York or anything, but it just would have been, you know, the fans at the time were just pumping their own brakes. So, I mean, I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, Yelich is never going to go 0-for-4 in a game with three strikeouts.
No.
I actually think when you look at what this Brewers team is made up identity-wise, it's really fun because Christian Yelich is a lot like what Craig Counsell was, you know, just kind of soft-spoken, does his job every day, you know, measurables. Yes, Yelich is a tall dude, but he's kind of lanky and, you know, kind of a string beam. And he really, I think, you know, is what the identity of this Brewers team. And Counsell, I mean, gosh, yes, it's amazing he's from Whitefish Bay, but he, you know, has really become kind of the face of Milwaukee sports other than, you know, Giannis Antetokounmpo.
Yeah, probably. There's another guy too, Aaron Rodgers, that we'll probably talk about a little bit later. Another guy I want to kind of get into is Yasiel Puig of the Los Angeles Dodgers. They, of course, win the other bracket, the other NLDS over the Braves on Monday night. 6-2 victory for them. Manny Machado with a big three-run homer. He kind of gets off the schneid. And Yasiel Puig spouts his mouth off a little bit again and says that they were going to take Milwaukee in four games, which, of course, would mean they're going to sweep the Milwaukee Brewers. I don't know if I really would go that far if I'm Puig. And that's, you know, for a guy who hits eighth in their order, that's somebody to – it's a little steep for him.
Yeah, I mean, obviously it's ridiculous by Yasiel Puig, somebody that at one time was thought to be a star in the major leagues and now is basically part of a platoon in the outfield.
He's kind of a sideshow guy. I mean, really.
Yeah, I mean, they were trying to get rid of him, you know, at different parts of a lot of the last couple seasons.
And they sent him down, but, I think, I mean, at one point. Was it last year for a while?
Yeah, he was sent down last year. The only thing, I mean, we're not going to get into predictions here, but what people have kind of circled back to Brewers Rockies the most is you look at that extra innings game in game number one last Thursday, and who knows if that goes the other way.
Right.
You know, then the Brewers have wasted Chacin, and thankfully the Rockies never scored another run. But who knows? We could, you know, be looking at, you know, right now a five game series, you know, going, you know, in the divisional round. Thank God we didn't have to deal with that and sweat it out. The Brewers took a bit care of business quick on Sunday, making people forget about the Packer game. But
I
don't think this could be a sweep. But you look up and down that Dodgers lineup, they add Machado, Matt Kemp, Kershaw, the Buehler kid, that's the rookie pitcher. I mean, they're stacked.
Walker Buehler, I think is his name. So
yeah, what a hell of a baseball name right there. But the Dodgers are stacked. They got a really good manager that I really like a lot. But this will be a fun series. You know, it'll be fun to see the Brewers go out west, hopefully at least up, you know, tied 1-1. 2-0 would obviously be amazing. But Chavez Ravine has always been a tough place to play, but Braun has always played well out in the West Coast.
Yeah, he has too. And, you know, you mentioned game one back there against the Rockies. I don't know. I don't know if they give out an NLDS MVP, but I think I would give mine to Mike Moustakas because he had an RBI in game two that was pretty big as well. But in game one, you know, as you alluded to, he saved that game from Jeremy Jeffress. And if you lose game one there, I mean, it's the door is wide open for the Rockies. And the Brewers were able to come back and slam that and then obviously go through. And the offense kind of exploded a little bit as well on Sunday in game three. And if they had played a game four in Colorado, it was going to be 39 degrees, I think, in a night game, like a 7:30 local time, 8:30 central time, 9:30 eastern time game. So thank God we didn't have to sit through that one.
Yeah, I mean, you look at that game, who knows, but Mike Moustakas right now to me is the second most valuable Brewer hitter. He's way better than Jesus Aguilar has been really over the last few weeks. Bronny is hit or miss, and Travis Shaw, the mayor, we haven't seen a lot of in terms of, you know, huge, huge hits. I'm kind of still waiting for him to really get hot from the left side of the plate, but, you know, just that moment in Colorado on Sunday, there was a great Instagram post out there from a bar in Denver called Swanky's. It's a Wisconsin bar.
Yeah.
I've actually been there before. And the Wisconsin faithful, whether they were transplants in Denver or, you know, went out to the game, they drank and ate that place clean. So definitely represented well out in the Mile High City.
Yeah. So obviously we get into kind of pitching matchups here, I think, for the NLCS. And we don't really have anything as we record this podcast, but one can assume we're probably going to be seeing Clayton Kershaw for the Dodgers, and I would hope Yolis Chacin for the Brewers in game one. So you kind of get the two de facto aces here in game one right away. And I would assume that lines up for the Brewers because Chacín actually pitched game two against the Rockies, and that was last Friday. So he'd have an entire week off. So I would imagine they'll go with him. And you're going to see Clayton Kershaw, who's kind of done a better job the last year. And then he was good, of course, against the Braves in that game one, where I think he went eight innings, shutout innings against the Braves. So you're going to see kind of a Kershaw who's kind of back to normal in the postseason. So it's going to be tough. And the Brewers, I feel like, have had some success against him. I don't have the numbers in front of me, but it just seems like they have been able to. And I think they'll load up on righties and just kind of go after him.
Yeah, I mean, your biggest fear is this is a Peyton Manning moment where we've all been waiting so many years for Clayton Kershaw to break through in the postseason, have that magical run where, you know, he has 3-4 wins throughout a postseason and really propels a Dodgers to a World Series. You just hate to see it have to happen against the Brewers where, you know, he goes out Monday, quiets the home crowd early, and then, you know, we're facing a Saturday, you know, afternoon game potentially, you know, going down 2-0 in a series heading out west to L.A.
Yeah, and do you worry at all about the long layoff for the Brewers? I mean, it'll be 4 full days off. Do you think that presents – I mean, the Dodgers, too, will have 3 full days off. I mean, it's not like, you know, they're playing a five-game series and getting an emotional victory at home, and they're going to be a little cold themselves. I'm not as worried about a long layoff. I think that the Brewers have done it with good pitching, good bullpen, and the bullpen's been tremendous all year. So I have no reason to believe that. I think if they had done this with like eight runs a game in this 3-game sweep, I'd be a little worried about the bats cooling off. But I think pitching's a little bit of a different animal.
Yeah, I mean, I think you look at like when we see long layoffs in the NBA, sometimes those teams are a little bit of rust. You know, they're rusty. But when you play 162 baseball games, and then you play that, you know, one game division title playoff, and then you got to play 3 high pressure games in the divisional series, it probably helps to have a layoff, and then, you know, you're not facing what the Dodgers have to do, and that's at, you know, fly, you know, 1,500 miles across the country and then set roots in Milwaukee for a couple days. The Brewers, thankfully, finished with the best record in the National League. I think that kind of goes under the radar that, you know, they have home field advantage, you know, throughout the whole NL side of the playoffs.
Yeah, I agree, obviously. People keep asking me, like, is that game in Milwaukee? And it's like, yeah, you people forgot we got the one seed. And we're definitely not going to L.A. for the first couple games. And so I think that does definitely help. And now we'll see, too, with, you know, what kind of adjustments they make to the roster. There are a couple surprises. No Zach Davies, no Chase Anderson. But I think you might see one of those guys sneak back on this NLCS roster, but given that it's a 7-game series. And they're probably not going to sweep the Dodgers. So I think you're going to see Gio Gonzalez. I mean, I would imagine he's going to start a game. I don't think they're going to mess around with the bullpen day. They may. We'll have to see. If they go up 2-0 or something, they might do a bullpen day. But I think I would just keep it pretty simple. But I do think you're going to see Gio Gonzalez, who I believe got up in the pen every game in that NLDS, but I don't think actually got into a game. So I think we're going to see him, and he's been a pretty good pickup for the Brewers. I mean, he's done more than enough, and it just kind of – to Derek Johnson, the Brewers pitching coach, has kind of been masterful with these guys like Chacín and stuff. So, but I do think you're probably going to see a guy like Chase Anderson or Zach Davies sneak their way back on the postseason roster, because you're going to need an extra starter, I think, or an extra arm in that bullpen. You can't just trot out Corey Knable every single day, I don't think. You know, they've been fortunate enough to be winning in a lot of these games, and I'm curious to see how Council kind of manages with, you know, a situation where they're not, because all season long, he stuck to his guns with, you know, we're not going to throw Hader unless we're winning. And I'm guessing that's going to change in the postseason, but we still haven't really seen it yet. I'm curious to see how we might manage these games. And I think he's figured out a good formula for the bullpen with Knable. And then you see Hader or Soria for kind of that 7th, 8th. And then you get Jefferson in the 9th. But we'll see if the Brewers actually face a little adversity here. I mean, they shut out the Rockies 27 out of 28 innings in that series, a pretty high-powered offense themselves. That was certainly on fire that last week of the regular season. But I'll be curious to see who gets put on the roster for the Brewers and how Council maybe manages the bullpen in a situation where they're not winning and against arguably a better team in the Dodgers.
Yeah, you bring up a good point with a 7-game series. We probably won't lean on the bullpen as much early on in games. I would expect, you know, either Wade Miley or Gio Gonzalez to get the start in game two, which is Saturday afternoon in Milwaukee. And then, you know, whichever doesn't draw the ball there will get it for game three in Los Angeles. Corey Knebel has been amazing since returning from Colorado Springs. I mean, it looked like his season may be lost, even dating back to April when he had that nasty injury. I mean, this has been a huge turn of events for Corey Knebel.
Yeah, Knebel had another interesting comment. I'm trying to think exactly what it was. There were a few botched. Clearly Bob Costas, bless his heart, and Jim Cott was the other guy. Their research wasn't the greatest on the Brewers, but we're kind of used to that kind of stuff here in the smallest media market in professional sports in North America. We're kind of used to that type of thing, but it's kind of like, he said Knebel struggled most of the year. And I thought, well, wait a minute. He was hurt for like 2 months. Then he came back and had, one like bad series against the Padres where he's really bad. He cost them like two games in the series against the worst team in the league or in the National League. And then they sent him down and he's been good pretty much ever since the last couple months. So, I mean, he's on fire and he seems to be locked into that sixth inning role. But I'm worried and I'm curious, you know, what if Chacín takes the ball game one and only goes four? You're going to need to see a Dan Jennings or something who was also left off the postseason roster. So I'm a little worried.
Do you think Eric Thames sneaks his way onto the championship series roster?
I don't, because you got Keon Broxton who can run very well. Obviously he ran into a home run in game three when that Rockies bullpen fell apart, but Keon can run and he's the late game right fielder. And Thames can't do really either of those. And I think if you want to, unless they leave Granderson off,
that's... I would rather have Granderson just with postseason experience. You know, he's more of a big game left-handed hitter. Right. But I just do think deep down, I don't know how it would work, but Eric Thames just seems due for a home run. He's been such an emotional leader for the Brewers the last 2 years. But, you know, you don't want to leave a guy off like Domingo, you know, off the roster, who's really, you know, such an asset to have as a fourth outfielder. You know, he's better than Keon, but Keon is that kind of late defensive replacement. So it should be interesting, you know, how Travis Shaw and then Jonathan Scope, how they balance out at second base. If Kershaw's going game one, I think Jonathan Scope gets the start there. And he has looked better, you know, still struggling. He's barely batting over 200 as a member of the Brewers. But he's also a guy that, you know, before we traded for, he was the American League Player of the Week. So it'd be a great time for Jonathan Scope to become a Brewer hero.
The funny thing about Scope is I could see a situation where leaving him off the roster. I mean, you won't, because I don't think Stearns would trade for him and then, geez, leave him off the NLCS roster. But the way Orlando Arcia has been hitting and
Hernan, I mean, Hernan has got to go in the game now before Jonathan Scope.
Hernan, God, you're white. Perez.
He's another one of those guys that scrap heap guy, can play anywhere, I feel like, and that's so beneficial for Craig Counsell when he gets into these double switches.
Yeah, and he does it every game, and some Brewer fans get upset about taking Jesus Aguilar's bat out of the game in a close game, because typically that's been the formula. You get to the sixth, you bring in Knebel. You go to Hader, and then by the seventh inning, you're probably putting Perez in at second if he's not in the game already, and moving Shaw over to first, and keeping Moustakas at third, obviously. So that's tended to work, because Shaw is a better defender, in my opinion, than Aguilar. But Aguilar holds his own. I mean, by looking at him, you wouldn't guess it, but he's been a perfectly fine first baseman. So, well, interesting to see, or, you know, I'm interested to see what, if Council makes any different moves there, but I don't really foresee it necessarily. So, what's your final prediction on the Brewers?
I'm going to pick the Brewers because I want to see them in a World Series. We've never seen that in our lifetime. The Brewers have not been to a World Series since 1982. You know, nationally, the storyline is going to be, can we see Red Sox, Dodgers? But I think seeing Brewers, Astros would be really fun, because David Stearns is from that Astros kind of bloodline. And, you know, he built this team not only using what he learned from the Astros, but you got to look at that Carlos Gomez trade as well as a heist at this point.
Oh,
and
yeah.
It would be the Astros.
There almost had to be some collusion there, right?
100%. And the Astros are getting a lot of love as maybe being like a Warriors-esque team. They're just so homegrown. They have so many studs. Carlos Correa is not playing great, but they got Bregman, Altuve, Verlander. I mean, I would hate to have to see that team as much as I'd hate to see the Red Sox in a World Series. But I think at that point, if the Brewers could be in a World Series, it's just a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity.
Yeah, no question about it. I'm going to go Brewers in six. I think where the Brewers are going to have a chance to go to the World Series on the night of the Bucks home opener next Friday, October 19th. So that could be a big Milwaukee sports night. I'm curious to see what happens there.
With a Packers bye week, how timely would that be for the Bucks and Brewers to kind of own the weekend as the Bucks kind of open their season up? I'll go Brewers in five, and that's only contingent on winning game one. If you can steal game one, and I consider it stealing even though it's at home because you're going up against one of the best pitchers in baseball, we think Kershaw's going to start. I mean, that could be huge for the rest of the series.
Yeah, obviously, with the 2-3-2 format they have in baseball, you lose game one. That's almost as tough to overcome as a best of five series. So, like I said, I'm going to go Brewers in six, I think, here. I think they win, obviously, at least one at home. And then they get one in Los Angeles and kind of maybe win the last one in L.A. and then win it back here in front of the fans and celebrate for the first time on their home turf. But I'm sure Charlie and I will talk more about it probably in the next edition of Tap into Keg. I doubt the series is going to be over by that point. So we'll definitely have more coming at you. And Murph brought up the Green Bay Packers there. Obviously, there's a lot to unpack with them right now because we really don't know what the Green Bay Packers are at this point. They lose 31-23 week five action, right?
Yep.
Week five action in Detroit. And I mean, again, it feels like another game where the Packers, nobody expected them to lose, and they come out flat again and are down 14-0 or more. It was 24-0 at half, I guess, is all you need to know. And Mason Crosby misses a bunch of field goals. Aaron Rodgers kind of doesn't play a very good game. And things seem to be a little bit of a mess right now up in 1265 Red China.
Yeah, I mean, 12 penalties, that kills a team. Going down 24-0, I don't care who you have at quarterback, it's going to be tough. It's not all on the rest of the team, though. Rodgers loses two fumbles, three overall in the year. He's got to get rid of the ball faster. I cannot stand us starting slow. But as much as, you know, Mike McCarthy has just been a pinata all week long for Packers Nation, but you got to remember that Aaron Rodgers still not, you know, he's looked healthier and healthier the last few weeks, but they're still running everything out of the pistol. We haven't seen Rodgers much under center, if at all. But all you got to do in the NFL is win your home games. And as I look at the schedule, the Packers have seven easy wins, I think, on this schedule. And then they just got to win, you know, one of the four tough road games against the Rams and the Patriots. That's back-to-back out of the bye week. Or later on, you know, against the Vikings or the Bears, both on the road. But, I mean, the Packers are nine-point favorites going into Monday Night Football against C.J. Beathard. I think that's going to be a pretty easy game in front of the Lambeau faithful.
Well, yeah, and that game is a little bit of a slump buster, no question, as the Niners have been, you know, not even close to the same team without Jimmy Garoppolo. And but, you know, as far as, I guess, going back a little bit to the Lions game, you know, what I know we talked a little bit in the pre-show meeting here about, are you ready to end the Rodgers and McCarthy marriage? And I guess we're not going to be that spicy with it probably, but I mean, there certainly is a debate or some sort of discussion to be had about what the hell's going on between, you know, McCarthy or, you know, kind of pick a side type of thing, right? It seems to be, here the early part of this week, a lot of the conjecture on Twitter has been, you know, is it McCarthy's fault or is it Rodgers' fault? And I don't know where you stand on it.
I mean, I've always been a big McCarthy fan. I don't like firing coaches. It's tough to find coaches as successful as McCarthy's been, you know, multiple.
See, and that's exactly what he says, too.
Yeah, and he says that, you know, Packer faithful doesn't want to hear it. Stephen A. Smith has been blasting McCarthy all week, saying that the Packers and him are wasting Aaron Rodgers' prime. But Aaron Rodgers has broken two collarbones in the last few seasons, and I love Aaron Rodgers. Don't get me wrong, but, you know, the sky is not falling on 1265 Lombardi, and this bye week, as long as they can take care of business, I mean, can't come at a better time, and we're not going to fire McCarthy in the middle of the season. I mean, that's just not going to happen.
I just, no. I mean, unless, you know, unless you lose to the Niners and you look bad again. And, you know, the thing is, for as bad as the Packers looked, I mean, Mason Crosby makes three of those four field goals he missed. He missed three pretty, I don't want to call them cupcakes. I mean, they were in the 40s, but, I mean, those are chip shots pretty much for him. And he missed them, and he has the yips. And I feel like we do this about every third year with Mason Crosby, where he just seems to have a terrible game. And obviously he's built himself enough of a resume where you're not going to part ways with him right now. But, I mean, another game like that, and we might be talking about a different story.
Yeah, I mean, Aaron Rodgers had his kickers back, but that's kind of been a storyline of the NFL all year. You know, it's been roughing the passer calls, not only for the Packers, but kicking issues, you know, across the league. And that was hard to watch for Mason Crosby. You know, if he does a typical Mason Crosby, you know, day, we win by 2 points, and it's one of the biggest comebacks in NFL history. And I thought the Packers were going to come back in that, at least in that third quarter. I was like, you know, the Lions aren't that good. They usually don't play well with the lead. But it's just frustrating. You know, these NFL seasons are so long, and it's every year for the Packers is Super Bowl or bust. And,
yeah,
you know, I try not to get too emotional about the losses anymore, as high as I get about the wins. But it's just been a long time since we weren't up against the eight ball, it feels like, and didn't get a couple breaks our way.
I guess, what do you think is the biggest problem right now, though? I mean, is it because you were kind of placing more of the blame on Rodgers? Is it more of him not trusting people? Is it more of him holding the ball too long? I mean, that's kind of, those two are related. You know, there were a lot of plays on Sunday where he just was missing open guys, and I don't know what it is.
Well, he can't practice. That stinks.
Yep.
I mean, the line is not great. Brian Bulaga, I'd be shocked if he made it through the whole season. He can barely, you know, even manage to get through a whole game with that back injury. It's, you know, been kind of a worst case, you know, start for the Packers, you know, regardless of their record right now. And the Bears, at some point, you know, they're going to come back down to earth. But anytime your quarterback basically almost has a season-ending knee injury, you know, the fact that you sit here, you know, 2-2-1, I mean, can you be that mad? You're undefeated at home, you know, even with the tie, and you've lost both your road games to, you know, NFC opponents, you know, with a lot of penalties on the road. I mean, I'm not trying to stick up here for the Packers, but, you know, talk to me at the end of November. If things are still looking really bad, then, you know, we'll go through a month of December where it looks like Mike McCarthy's on his way out.
Yeah. 2-2-1. I mean, I think a lot of people are upset about the tie and just the way that whole game went. And, you know, really, I guess things aren't too bad. But, you know, then you had the Bills game that was kind of a built-in win, and it didn't look great. 22-0 win there. A lot of field goals there, too. And hey, maybe it was only two because they missed an extra point again, which seems to be, again.
And we have a rookie. We have another rookie punter. I mean, that's always kind of been, you know, that's kind of the built-in excuse for Crosby. But, if he goes out and misses his first two field goals on Monday Night Football, you guarantee with a long, you know, layoff with the bye week, the Packers are going to be trying out kickers. I mean, maybe we could go knock on Ryan Longwell's door.
Ryan Longwell, one of the best kickers in Packers history, him and Chris Jackie. Was Longwell on the 2010 team that won the Super Bowl?
No, Mason Crosby was on that team for sure.
Yeah, so you're darn right.
He's also one of the highest paid kickers in the NFL, which is frustrating for sure. So
I'm getting old, man. I can't believe I asked if Ryan Longwell was on the team in 2010.
That's a brutal job by you.
He was probably gone in like 2003.
No, he probably played to at least 2005, 2006. He, you know, he did go to the Vikings.
Well, right, he went to the Vikings for a couple of years. Yeah. Any other NFL things that you noticed around the league, as far as, the Dolphins have fallen. My Dolphins have fallen apart a little bit.
I mean, I think the big game this week is Patriots Chiefs on Sunday Night Football. That should kind of, you know, watch, you know, everyone was willing to write the Patriots off as usual in early September. And, you know, if they beat the Chiefs on Sunday Night Football, all of a sudden, you know, they kind of control their own destiny for the one seed in the AFC. That's a big game. The Saints, you know, they look great at home as usual.
Yeah.
The NFC East is a mess. And I still really like the Packers, you know, the Packers' opportunity to win this division. And, you know, I think it's probably going to be tough at this point to get a two seed with how good the Rams and Saints look. But, you know, crazier things have happened. And I'm on the record, and I'll say it again. I think the Packers in 3 weeks are going to go into L.A., you know, on a primetime afternoon game, and they're going to beat the Rams.
I'd love to see it. I think the Packers are probably a 9-win team. So they're probably, I guess that you got 7 easy wins according to you. So that would match up right there. And then I guess if you can sneak out one of those tough games on the road, I guess that puts them at 10-5-1. I think that probably gets you in the playoffs easy. 9-6-1, you're probably going to need some help. Of course, there'll probably be a couple more ties along the way in the NFL. I think the NFL likes these ties.
No, I think Bill Simmons brought up a great point from the Ringer. I think you should not be able to punt during overtime because you just kind of see these teams, you know, that you saw with the Browns last week when they got their first home divisional win in 4 years. They're just playing back and forth. It's a field position game. I think if we eliminated the punt, it would make overtime so much more interesting. I don't want to go the college route where everybody starts at the 25, you know, in basically, yeah. You know, you're almost in the red zone of the opposing team. But I think eliminating punts would maybe be something the competition committee looks at if we end up having, you know, 6-7 ties at the end of the year.
One thing I thought about was like maybe going to the college style after like each team has the ball once.
Okay. I don't mind that. I hate watching overtime, man. It stinks. And then especially if you're watching a noon 1 o'clock game here for me in the East Coast, then it's all of a sudden bleeding over till the, you know, those afternoon prime slots, which I'm sure the NFL is not happy about, but
right. The
league's wide open right now. I don't think the league's ever been in recent history this wide open. I know the Rams are undefeated, the Chiefs are undefeated, but those teams are pretty unproven. And you know, teams can get hot at the right time. Todd Gurley's my MVP right now. I mean, that guy, all he does is get in the end zone. I don't know if there's a better player inside 5 yards right now other than Todd Gurley.
Yeah. Real quick, Murph, on the Wisconsin Badgers as well. They got a big weekend coming up. They come off the bye. They're in the Big House this weekend, a night game. I feel like a rare night game at the Big House. So the Badgers got a chance to kind of build that resume back up. I don't know if the national title hopes are completely dashed. They're definitely on life support after the loss to BYU a couple weeks ago. They did get the win against Iowa. I don't know. We just wanted to touch a little bit on the Badgers. So, I mean, what do you got anything about Wisconsin? Do you like their chances against Michigan? Jim Harbaugh, I think, has his I don't know if he has his back up against the wall, but he's kind of coaching for his job this year, I think.
I mean, he's not coaching for his job because he's got a huge contract and he's a Michigan man, but, I mean, the Badgers didn't get any help last week on a bye week. Utah State blows out BYU, and that loss looks even worse at home now. You know, college football, it's a mess in the SEC right now. It really looks like Alabama and Georgia – and then everybody else with LSU and Auburn and Kentucky all losing. UCF finally cracks the top 10. So they're going to be somebody that if you look at the end of the year, if somehow the Badgers run the table and were to lose in the Big Ten championship game, it'd be tough for them to get in with 2 losses compared to a potentially undefeated UCF team. So this is a huge game for Paul Christ, huge game for, you know, Alex Hornibrook. And Jonathan Taylor looked good, you know, against – who'd they have? Indiana, was that? Or Nebraska?
Iowa. Oh, Nebraska, yeah. They did beat Nebraska. You're right.
But I just think that, you know, Michigan needs this win to kind of continue on to that circled game at the end of the regular season against Ohio State. So I think the Badgers probably lose. I haven't been impressed with Hornibrook. And they're definitely missing some playmakers on the outside just from an explosive standpoint. I think the Badgers have really taken a back seat, you know, to the Brewers, you know, and obviously they're always going to take a backseat to the Packers. But since they lost that shocking game against BYU, you just really haven't heard a lot about the Badgers, you know, locally or nationally.
Well, yeah, and I was going to say, admittedly, I've done a lot of work on a lot of Saturdays with the Brewers and everything, being on all summer long and all fall, and they've been obviously staying completely irrelevant all the way through. So it's been kind of tough for me personally to catch a lot of these games, especially a couple night games. Mixed in there for sure the last few weeks, and you got again one again this week, but I'll definitely be watching this coming Saturday as the will probably be full. Well, the Brewer game will be over, so I'll be trying to get my first look, but what little bit I've seen of Alex Hornibrook, a lot of people thought the Badgers would have this high-powered offense that, you know, Hornibrook looked great against Miami, and you got Jonathan Taylor, who's a Heisman candidate, and yeah, but I think a lot of people forgot about how much they lost in that defense. So, you know, I don't know. If they have the blessing of the Big Ten championship game where they could face Ohio State, and Ohio State will probably be a very highly ranked team at that point. And just got to keep winning games, I guess, and just doing your doing your best to kind of put yourself in a position.
Yeah, and I just think the story, though, is obviously what could be a magical sports weekend in Wisconsin. I mean, I don't know if there's ever been a bigger sports weekend. Yes, it sucks that we're not getting Jimmy Garoppolo versus Aaron Rodgers on Monday night, but still, to have two Brewers home games with a huge opportunity to, you know, pave your way to the World Series and then maybe follow it up with a what I hope is just a classic Packers blowout on Monday Night Football, leading in then to what they'll be going up against, you know, the Brewers and Dodgers game three. All eyes will, as they should be, probably on Brewers-Dodgers, but, you know, what a fun Monday into a Tuesday next week it could be is, by that point, the CEO, Charlie Chichler, he'll be back from London, and he'll be pretty riled up to talk some Brewers World Series chances, I feel like.
Yeah, and we'll definitely get into that with more tapping the keg with me personally, and I'm sure Charlie will definitely be ready to make up for lost time while was in London. Murph, it's been a pleasure. We will... I guess probably do this again at some point this week. I'm honestly really not even sure when Charlie comes back.
I think Charlie's coming back on Friday. I feel like I saw that in one of our classic tapping the keg text exchanges. But two tapping the kegs in a row for me. Probably haven't done that since the spring of 2013.
Yeah, so the old fun, days.
The old days back in the. Old Trichler Wauwatosa basement.
The Wauwatosa snow tap offices. Those were certainly the days recording with the Blue Yeti. Murph, follow him on Twitter at the Nolan Murphy. I am on Twitter at Mitch Ross MKE. You can listen on Snowtap WI. It's snowtapwi.com, I should say. It is a website, as Charlie likes to say. And also you can listen on iTunes, SoundCloud, wherever you get your shows. Tapping the Keg Podcast, the Snow Tap Network. What else, Murph? Anything else I'm missing? Follow us on Twitter. Again, I gave those handles out. Charlie's on Twitter at SnowTapWY. I'm on Twitter at MitchRossMKE. Give us a shout on there. Love to talk to you guys on Twitter, talk about sports. I got the Bucks game on here as they wrap up on Tuesday night. Hanging in there with the bums, I guess, the back-end guys. The Bucks kind of resting like 10 guys tonight. So in the third preseason game, because in the NBA, we treat the third preseason game like it's bullshit, Murph.
Oh, yeah. I mean, bet the Bucks to win the division. They look good. Coach Bud, he's been firing threes left and right. I'm excited for the Bucks to start up next week. And as I, you know, kind of stumbled into that, you know, just go Brewers, baby. That's all that matters this weekend.
Yeah, I got the Bucks for 60. So feel free to at me on that again on Twitter.
So, love it, baby. Let's go, Brewers.
Talk to you guys later. Peace.